Eight, said Bill, unless you want me to tell you some more travel stories. Go on. Let's eat. We went downstairs and out onto the Boulevard Saint-Michel in the warm June evening. Where will we go? Want to eat on the island?
Sure.
We walked down the boulevard. At the juncture of the Rue d'Enfer Rochereau with the boulevard is a statue of two men in flowing robes.
I know who they are.
Bill eyed the monument.
Gentlemen who invented pharmacy. Don't try and fool me on Paris.
We went on.
Here's the taxidermists, Bill said. Want to buy anything? Nice stuffed dog?
Come on, I said, you're pie-eyed.
Pretty nice stuffed dogs, Bill said. Certainly brighten up your flat.
Come on.
Just one stuffed dog. I can take him or leave him alone, but listen, Jake, just one stuffed dog.
Come on.
Mean everything in the world to you after you bought it. Simple exchange of values. You give them money, they give you a stuffed dog.
We'll get one on the way back.
All right, have it your own way. Road to hell paved with unbought stuffed dogs. Not my fault.
We went on.
How do you feel that way about dogs so sudden?
Always felt that way about dogs. Always been a great lover of stuffed animals.
We stopped and had a drink.
Certainly like to drink, Bill said. You ought to try it sometimes, Jake.
You're about 144 ahead of me.
Ought not to daunt you. Never be daunted. Secret of my success, never been daunted. Never been daunted in public.
Where were you drinking?
Stopped at the Creon. George made me a couple of Jack Roses. George is a great man. Know the secret of his success? Never been daunted.
You'll be daunted after about three more Pernods.
Not in public. If I begin to feel daunted, I'll go off by myself. I'm like a cat that way.
When did you see Harvey Stone?
At the Creon, Harvey was just a little daunted. Hadn't eaten for 3 days, doesn't eat anymore. Just goes off like a cat. Pretty sad.
He's all right.
Splendid. Wish he wouldn't keep going off like a cat, though. Makes me nervous.
What'll we do tonight?
Doesn't make any difference, only let's not get daunted. Suppose they got any hard-boiled eggs here? If they had hard-boiled eggs here, we wouldn't have to go all the way down to the island to eat.
Nix, I said, we're going to have a regular meal.
Just a suggestion, said Bill.
Want to start now?
Come on. We started on again down the boulevard. A horse cab passed us. Bill looked at it.
You see that horse cab? Gonna have that horse cab stuffed for you for Christmas. Gonna give all my friends stuffed animals. I'm a nature writer.
A taxi passed. Someone in it waved, then banged for the driver to stop. The taxi backed up to the curb. In it was Brett.
Beautiful lady, said Bill. Going to kidnap us.
Hello, Brett said. Hello. This is Bill Gorton. Lady Ashley. Brett smiled at Bill. I say, I'm just back. Haven't bathed even. Michael comes in tonight. Good. Come on and eat with us. We'll all go to meet him. Must clean myself. Oh, rot. Come on. Must bathe. He doesn't get in till 9. Come and have a drink, then, before you bathe. Might do that. Now you're not talking rot. We got in the taxi. The driver looked around.
Stop at the nearest bistro, I said.
We might as well go to the Closerie, Brett said. I can't drink these rotten brandies.
Closerie des Lilas.
Brett turned to Bill. Have you been in this pestilential city long?
Just got in today from Budapest.
How was Budapest?
Wonderful. Budapest was wonderful.
Ask him about Vienna.
Vienna, said Bill, is a strange city.
Very much like Paris, Brett smiled at him, wrinkling the corners of her eyes.
Exactly, Bill said, very much like Paris at this moment.
You have a good start. Sitting out on the terraces of the Lila, Brett ordered a whiskey and soda, I took one too, and Bill took another Pernod. How are you, Jake?
Great, I said. I've had a good time. Brett looked at me.
I was a fool to go away, she said. One's an ass to leave Paris.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, all right. Interesting. Not frightfully amusing.
See anybody?
No, hardly anybody. I never went out.
Didn't you swim?
No, didn't do a thing.
Sounds like Vienna, Bill said.
Brett wrinkled up the corners of her eyes at him.
So that's the way it was in Vienna.
It was like everything in Vienna.
Brett smiled at him again. You have a nice friend, Jake.
He's all right, I said. He's a taxidermist.
That was in another country, Bill said. And besides, all the animals were dead.
One more, Brett said, and I must run. Do send the waiter for a taxi.
There's a line of them right out in front.
Good.
We had the drink and put Brett into her taxi.
Mind you're at the Select around 10. Make him come. Michael will be there.
We'll be there, Bill said.
The taxi started and Brett waved.
Quite a girl, Bill said. She's damn nice. Who's Michael?
The man she's going to marry.
Well, well, Bill said, that's always just the stage I meet anybody. What'll I send them? Think they'd like a couple of stuffed racehorses?
We better eat.
Is she really lady something or other?
Bill asked in the taxi on our way down to the Ile Saint-Louis.
Oh, yes, in the stud book and everything.
Well, well.
We ate dinner at Madame Le Comte's restaurant on the far side of the island. It was crowded with Americans, and we had to stand up and wait for a place. Someone had put it in the American Women's Club list as a quaint restaurant on the Paris Quai, as yet untouched by Americans, so we had to wait 45 minutes for a table. Bill had eaten at the restaurant in 1918, and right after the armistice, and Madame Le Comte made a great fuss over seeing him.
Doesn't get us a table, though, Bill said. Grand woman, though.
We had a good meal, a roast chicken, new green beans, mashed potatoes, a salad, and some apple pie and cheese.
You've got the world here, all right, Bill said to Madame Le Comte.
She raised her hand.
Oh, my God. You'll be rich.
I hope so.
After the coffee and a fiend, we got the bill, chalked up the same as ever on a slate that was doubtless one of the quaint features, paid it, shook hands, and went out.
You never come here anymore, Mr. Barnes, Madame Le Comte said.
Too many compatriots.
Come at lunchtime. It's not crowded then.
Good, I'll be down soon. We walked along under the trees that grew out over the river on the Quai d'Orléans side of the island. Across the river were the broken walls of old houses that were being torn down. They're going to cut a street through.
They would, Bill said.
We walked on and circled the island. The river was dark, and a bateau mouche went by, all bright with lights, going fast and quiet up and out of sight under the bridge. Down the river was Notre Dame, squatting against the night sky. We crossed to the left bank of the Seine by the wooden footbridge from the Quai de Béthune and stopped on the bridge and looked down the river at Notre Dame. Standing on the bridge, the island looked dark. The houses were high against the sky, and the trees were shadows.
That's pretty grand, Bill said. God, I love to get back.
We leaned on the wooden rail of the bridge and looked up the river to the lights of the big bridges. Below, the water was smooth and black. It made no sound against the piles of the bridge. A man and a girl passed us. They were walking with their arms around each other. We crossed the bridge and walked up the Rue du Cardinal Lemoine.
It was steep walking, and we went all the way up to the Place Contrescarpe. The arc light shone through the leaves of the trees in the square, and underneath the trees was an S-bus ready to start. Music came out of the door of the Nègre Joyeux. Through the window of the Café aux Amateurs, I saw the long zinc bar. Outside, on the terrace, working people were drinking. In the open kitchen of the Amateur, a girl was cooking potato chips in oil. There was an iron pot of stew. The girl ladled some onto a plate for an old man who stood holding a bottle of red wine in one hand.
"Want to have a drink?"
"No," said Bill, "I don't need it."
We turned to the right off the Place Contrescarpe, walking along smooth, narrow streets with high old houses on both sides. Some of the houses jutted out toward the street. Others were cut back. We came onto the Rue de Pot de Fer and followed it along until it brought us to the rigid north and south of the Rue Saint-Jacques, and then walked south past Val de Grasse, set back behind the courtyard and the iron fence to the Boulevard du Port Royal.
"What do you want to do?" I asked. "Go up to the cafe and see Brett and Mike?"
"Why not?"
We walked along Port Royal until it became Montparnasse, and then on past the Lilas, La Vignes, and all the little cafes, Damoy's, crossed the street to the Rotonde, past its lights and tables to the Select. Michael came toward us from the tables. He was tanned and healthy-looking.
"Hello, Jake," he said. "Hello, hello. How are you, old lad?"
"You look very fit, Mike."
"Oh, yeah, I'm frightfully fit. I've done nothing but walk. Walk all day long. One drink a day with my mother at tea."
Bill had gone into the bar. He was standing talking with Brett, who was sitting on a high stool, her legs crossed. She had no stockings on.
"It's good to see you, Jake," Michael said. "I'm a little tight, you know. Amazing, isn't it? Did you see my nose?"
There was a patch of dried blood on the bridge of his nose.
"An old lady's bags did that," Mike said. "I reached up to help her with them, and they fell on me."
Brett gestured at him from the bar with her cigarette holder and wrinkled the corners of her eyes.
"An old lady," said Mike. "Her bags fell on me. Let's go in and see Brett. I say she's a piece." "You're a lovely lady, Brett. Where'd you get that hat?"
"Chap bought it for me. Don't you like it?"
"It's a dreadful hat. Do get a good hat."
"Oh, we've so much money now," Brett said. "I say, haven't you met Bill yet? You're a lovely host, Jake." She turned to Mike. "This is Bill Gorton. This drunkard is Mike Campbell. Mr. Campbell is an undischarged bankrupt."
"Aren't I, though? You know, I met my ex-partner yesterday in London, chap who did me in." "What did he say?" "Bought me a drink. Thought I might as well take it. I say, Brett, you're a lovely piece. Don't you think she's beautiful?"
"Beautiful? With this nose?"
"It's a lovely nose. Go and point it at me. Isn't she a lovely piece?"
"Couldn't we have kept the man in Scotland?"
"I say, Brett, let's turn in early."
"Don't be indecent, Michael. Remember there are ladies at this bar."
"Isn't she a lovely piece? Don't you think so, Jake?" "There's a fight tonight," Bill said. "Like to go?" "A fight?" said Mike. "Who's fighting?" "Ledoux or somebody?" "He's very good, Ledoux," Mike said. "I like to see it, rather."
He was making an effort to pull himself together.
"But I can't go. I had a date with this thing here. I say, Brett, do get a new hat."
Brett pulled the felt hat down far over one eye and smiled out from under it. "You two run along to the fight. I'll have to be taking Mr. Campbell home directly."
"I'm not tight," Mike said. "Perhaps just a little. I say, Brett, you're a lovely piece."
"Go on to the fight," Brett said. "Mr. Campbell's getting difficult. What are these outbursts of affection? Michael."
"I say, you are a lovely piece."
We said goodnight.
I'm sorry I can't go, Mike said.
Brett laughed. I looked back from the door. Mike had one hand on the bar and was leaning toward Brett, talking. Brett was looking at him quite coolly, but the corners of her eyes were smiling. Outside on the pavement, I said, "Do you want to go to the fight?"
"Sure," said Bill, "if we don't have to walk."
Mike was pretty excited about his girlfriend, I said in the taxi.
"Well," said Bill, "you can't blame him such a hell of a lot."
Chapter 9. The Ledoux-Kid Francis fight was the night of the 20th of June. It was a good fight. The morning after the fight, I had a letter from Robert Cohn, written from Andai. He was having a very quiet time, he said, bathing, playing some golf, and much bridge. Andai had a splendid beach, but he was anxious to start on the fishing trip. When would I be down? If I would buy him a double-tapered line, he would pay me when I came down. That same morning, I wrote Cohn from the office that Bill and I would leave Paris on the 25th unless I wired him otherwise and would meet him at Bayonne, where we could get a bus over the mountains to Pamplona. The same evening, about 7 o'clock, I stopped in at the Select to see Michael and Brett. They were not there, and I went over to the Dingo. They were inside, sitting at the bar. "Hello, darling." Brett put out her hand.
"Hello, Jake," Mike said. "I understand I was tight last night."
"Weren't you, though?" Brett said. "Disgraceful business."
"Look," said Mike, "when do you go down to Spain? Would you mind if we came down with you?"
"It would be grand."
"You wouldn't mind, really. I've been in Pamplona, you know. Brett's mad to go. You're sure we wouldn't just be a bloody nuisance?"
"Don't talk like a fool."
"I'm a little tight, you know. I wouldn't ask you like this if I weren't. You sure you don't mind?"
"Oh, shut up, Michael," Brett said. "How can the man say he'd mind now? I'll ask him later."
"But you don't mind, do you?"
"Don't ask that again unless you want to make me sore. Bill and I go down in the morning of the 25th.
"By the way, where is Bill?"
Brett asked. "He's out at Chantilly dining with some people. He's a good chap."
"Splendid chap," said Mike. "He is, you know."
"You don't remember him?" Brett said.
"I do remember him perfectly."
"Look, Jake, we'll come down the night of the 25th. Brett can't get up in the morning."
"Indeed not."
"If our money comes, and you're sure you don't mind."
"It will come, all right. I'll see to that."
"Tell me what tackle to send for."
"Get 2 or 3 rods with reels and lines and some flies."
"I won't fish," Brett put in.
"Get 2 rods, then, and Bill won't have to buy one."
"Right," said Mike. "I'll send a wire to the keeper."
"Won't it be splendid," Brett said.
"Spain. We will have fun."
"The 25th. When is that?"
"Saturday."
"We will have to get ready."
"I say," said Mike, "I'm going to the barber's."
"I must bathe," said Brett. "Walk up to the hotel with me, Jake. Be a good chap."
"We have got the loveliest hotel," Mike said. "I think it's a brothel."
"We left our bags here at the Dingo when we got in, and they asked us at the hotel if we wanted a room for the afternoon only. Seemed frightfully pleased when we were going to stay all night."
"I believe it's a brothel," Mike said, "and I should know."
"Oh, shut it, and go and get your hair cut." Mike went out. Brett and I sat on at the bar.
"Have another?"
"Might."
"I needed that," Brett said.
We walked up the Rue de l'Ombre.
"I haven't seen you since I've been back," Brett said.
"No."
"How are you, Jake?"
"Fine." Brett looked at me.
"I say," she said, "is Robert Cohen going on this trip?"
"Yes, why?"
"Don't you think it will be a bit rough on him?"
"Why should it?"
"Who did you think I went down to San Sebastian with?"
"Congratulations," I said. We walked along.
"What did you say that for?"
"I don't know. What would you like me to say?" We walked along and turned a corner. He behaved rather well, too. He gets a little dull.
Does he? I rather thought it would be good for him.
He might take up social service.
Don't be nasty.
I won't.
Didn't you really know?
No, I said. I guess I didn't think about it.
Do you think it will be too rough on him?
That's up to him, I said. Tell him you're coming. He can always not come.
I'll write him and give him a chance to pull out of it. I did not see Brett again until the night of the 24th of June.
Did you hear from Cohn?
Rather, he's keen about it.
My God.
I thought it was rather odd myself. Says he can't wait to see me.
Does he think you're coming alone?
No, I told him we were all coming down together, Michael and all.
He's wonderful.
Isn't he?
They expected their money the next day. We arranged to meet at Pamplona. They would go directly to San Sebastian and take the train from there. We would all meet at the Montoya in Pamplona. If they did not turn up on Monday, at the latest, we would go on ahead up to Burguete in the mountains to start fishing. There was a bus to Burguete. I wrote out an itinerary so they could follow us. Bill and I took the morning train from the Gare d'Orsay. It was a lovely day, not too hot, and the country was beautiful from the start. We went back into the diner and had breakfast. Leaving the dining car, I asked the conductor for tickets for the first service.
Nothing until the 5th.
What's this?
There were never more than 2 servings of lunch on that train, and always plenty of places for both of them.
They're all reserved, the dining car conductor said. There will be a 5th service at 3:30.
This is serious, I said to Bill.
Give him 10 francs.
Here, I said, we want to eat in the first service. The conductor put the 10 francs in his pocket.
Thank you, he said. I would advise you gentlemen to get some sandwiches. All the places for the first 4 services were reserved at the office of the company.
You'll go a long way, brother, Bill said to him in English. I suppose if I'd given you 5 francs, you would have advised us to jump off the train.
Comment?
Go to hell, said Bill. Get the sandwiches made and a bottle of wine. You tell him, Jake.
And send it up to the next car.
I described where we were.
In our compartment were a man and his wife and their young son.
I suppose you're Americans, aren't you? The man said. Having a good trip? Wonderful, said Bill. That's what you want to do? Travel while you're young. Mother and I always wanted to get over, but we had to wait a while.
You could have come over 10 years ago if you'd wanted to, the wife said. What you always said was, see America first. I will say we've seen a good deal, take it one way and another.
Say, there's plenty of Americans on this train, the husband said. They've got 7 cars of them from Dayton, Ohio. They've been on a pilgrimage to Rome, and now they're going to Biarritz and Lourdes.
So that's what they are, pilgrims, goddamn Puritans, Bill said.
What part of the state you boys from?
Kansas City, I said. He's from Chicago.
You both going to Biarritz?
No, we're going fishing in Spain.
Well, I never cared for it myself. There's plenty that do out where I come from, though. We got some of the best fishing in the state of Montana. I've been out with the boys, but I never cared for it any.
Mighty little fishing you did on them trips, his wife said.
He winked at us.
You know how the ladies are. If there's a jug goes along or a case of beer, they think it's hell and damnation.
That's the way men are, his wife said to us. She smoothed her comfortable lap.
I voted against prohibition to please him, because I like a little beer in the house, and then he talks that way. It's a wonder they ever find anyone to marry them.
Say, said Bill, do you know that gang of Pilgrim Fathers have cornered the dining car until 3:30 this afternoon?
How do you mean they can't do a thing like that?
You try and get seats. Well, Mother, it looks as though we better go back and get another breakfast.
She stood up and straightened her dress.
Will you boys keep an eye on our things? Come on, Hubert.
They all three went up to the wagon restaurant. A little while after they were gone, a steward went through announcing the first service, and pilgrims, with their priests, commenced filing down the corridor. Our friend and his family did not come back. A waiter passed in the corridor with our sandwiches and the bottle of Chablis, and we called him in. "You're going to work today," I said. He nodded his head.
"They start now, at 10:30.
"When do we eat?"
"Huh, when do I eat?"
He left two glasses for the bottle, and we paid him for the sandwiches and tipped him.
"I'll get the plates," he said, "or bring them with you."
We ate the sandwiches and drank the Chablis and watched the country out of the window. The grain was just beginning to ripen, and the fields were full of poppies. The pasture land was green, and there were fine trees, and sometimes big rivers and chateaus off in the trees. At Tours, we got off and bought another bottle of wine, and when we got back in the compartment, the gentleman from Montana and his wife and his son, Hubert, were sitting comfortably.
"Is there good swimming in Biarritz?" asked Hubert.
"That boy's just crazy till he can get in the water," his mother said. "It's pretty hard on youngsters traveling."
"There's good swimming," I said, "but it's dangerous when it's rough."
"Did you get a meal?" Bill asked.
"We sure did. We sat right there when they started to come in, and they must have just thought we were in the party. One of the waiters said something to us in French, and then they just sent three of them back."
"They thought we were snappers, all right," the man said. "It certainly shows you the power of the Catholic Church. It's a pity you boys ain't Catholics. You could get a meal then, all right."
"I am," I said. "That's what makes me so sore." Finally, at 4:15, we had lunch. Bill had been rather difficult at the last. He buttonholed a priest who was coming back with one of the returning streams of pilgrims.
"When do us Protestants get a chance to eat, Father?"
"I don't know anything about it. Haven't you got tickets?"
"It's enough to make a man join the clan," Bill said.
The priest looked back at him. Inside the dining car, the waiters served the fifth successive table d'hôte meal. The waiter who served us was soaked through. His white jacket was purple under the arms.
"He must drink a lot of wine."
"Or wear purple undershirts."
"Let's ask him."
"No, he's too tired." The train stopped for half an hour at Bordeaux, and we went out through the station for a little walk. There was not time to get into the town. Afterward, we passed through the Landes and watched the sun set. There were wide fire gaps cut through the pines, and you could look up them like avenues and see wooded hills way off. About 7:30, we had dinner and watched the country through the open window in the diner. It was all sandy pine country full of heather. There were little clearings with houses in them, and once in a while we passed a sawmill. It got dark, and we could feel the country hot and sandy and dark outside of the window. And about 9 o'clock, we got into Bayonne. The man and his wife and Hubert all shook hands with us. They were going on to La Négresse to change for Biarritz.
"Well, I hope you have lots of luck," he said.
"Be careful about those bullfights."
"Maybe we'll see you at Biarritz,"
Hubert said. We got off with our bags and rod cases and passed through the dark station and out to the lights and the line of cabs and hotel buses. There, standing with the hotel runners, was Robert Cohn. He did not see us at first. Then he started forward.
"Hello, Jake. Have a good trip?"
"Fine," I said. "This is Bill Gorton."
"How are you?"
"Come on," said Robert. "I've got a cab."
He was a little nearsighted. I had never noticed it before. He was looking at Bill, trying to make him out. He was shy, too.
We'll go up to my hotel. It's all right. It's quite nice.
We got into the cab, and the cabman put the bags up on the seat beside him and climbed up and cracked his whip, and we drove over the dark bridge and into the town.
I'm awfully glad to meet you, Robert said to Bill. I've heard so much about you from Jake, and I've read your books. Did you get my line, Jake?
The cab stopped in front of the hotel, and we all got out and went in. It was a nice hotel, and the people at the desk were very cheerful, and we each had a good, small room. Chapter 10 In the morning it was bright, and they were sprinkling the streets of the town, and we all had breakfast in a cafe. Bayonne is a nice town. It is like a very clean Spanish town, and it is on a big river. Already, so early in the morning, it was very hot on the bridge across the river. We walked out on the bridge and then took a walk through the town. I was not at all sure Mike's rods would come from Scotland in time, so we hunted a tackle store and finally bought a rod for Bill upstairs over a dry goods store. The man who sold the tackle was out, and we had to wait for him to come back. Finally, he came in, and we bought a pretty good rod, cheap, and two landing nets. We went out into the street again and took a look at the cathedral. Cohn made some remark about it being a very good example of something or other, I forget what. It seemed like a nice cathedral, nice and dim, like Spanish churches. Then we went up past the old fort and out to the local Syndicat d'Initiative office, where the bus was supposed to start from. There they told us the bus service did not start until the 1st of July. We found out at the tourist office what we ought to pay for a motor car to Pamplona, and hired one at a big garage just around the corner from the municipal theater for 400 francs. The car was to pick us up at the hotel in 40 minutes, and we stopped at the cafe on the square where we had eaten breakfast and had a beer. It was hot, but the town had a cool, fresh, early morning smell, and it was pleasant, sitting in the cafe. A breeze started to blow, and you could feel that the air came from the sea. There were pigeons out in the square, and the houses were a yellow, sun-baked color, and I did not want to leave the cafe. But we had to go to the hotel to get our bags packed and pay the bill. We paid for the beers. We matched, and I think Cohn paid, and went up to the hotel. It was only 16 francs apiece for Bill and me, with 10% added for the service, and we had the bags sent down and waited for Robert Cohn. While we were waiting, I saw a cockroach on the parquet floor that must have been at least 3 inches long. I pointed him out to Bill and then put my shoe on him. We agreed he must have just come in from the garden. It was really an awfully clean hotel. Cohn came down, finally, and we all went out to the car. It was a big, closed car with a driver in a white duster with blue collar and cuffs, and we had him put the back of the car down. He piled in the bags, and we started off up the street and out of the town. We passed some lovely gardens and had a good look back at the town, and then we were out in the country, green and rolling, and the road climbing all the time. We passed lots of Basques, with oxen or cattle, hauling carts along the road, and nice farmhouses, low roofs, and all white plastered. In the Basque country, the land all looks very rich and green, and the houses and villages look well off and clean. Every village had a pelota court, and on some of them kids were playing in the hot sun. There were signs on the walls of the churches saying it was forbidden to play pelota against them, and the houses in the villages had red tiled roofs, and then the road turned off and commenced to climb, and we were going way up close along a hillside with a valley below and hills stretched off back toward the sea. You couldn't see the sea. It was too far away. You could see only hills and more hills, and you knew where the sea was. We crossed the Spanish frontier. There was a little stream and a bridge, and Spanish carabiniers, with patent leather Bonaparte hats and short guns on their backs, on one side, and on the other, fat Frenchmen in kepis and moustache. They only opened one bag, and took the passports in and looked at them. There was a general store and inn on each side of the line. The chauffeur had to go in and fill out some papers about the car, and we got out and went over to the stream to see if there were any trout. Bill tried to talk some Spanish to one of the carabiniers, but it did not go very well. Robert Cohn asked, pointing with his finger, if there were any trout in the stream, and the carabinier said yes, but not many. I asked him if he ever fished, and he said no, that he didn't care for it. Just then an old man, with long sunburned hair and beard, and clothes that looked as though they were made of gunny sacking, came striding up to the bridge. He was carrying a long staff, and he had a kid slung on his back, tied by the four legs, the head hanging down. The carabinier waved him back with his sword. The man turned without saying anything and started back up the white road into Spain. "What's the matter with the old one?" I asked. "He hasn't got any passport." I offered the guard a cigarette. He took it and thanked me. "What will he do?" I asked. The guard spat in the dust. "Oh, he'll just wade across the stream." "Do you have much smuggling?" "Oh," he said, "they go through." The chauffeur came out, folding up the papers and putting them in the inside pocket of his coat. We all got in the car and it started up the white, dusty road into Spain. For a while, the country was much as it had been. Then, climbing all the time, we crossed the top of a col, the road winding back and forth on itself, and then it was really Spain. There were long brown mountains and a few pines, and far-off forests of beech trees on some of the mountainsides. The road went along the summit of the col and then dropped down, and the driver had to honk and slow up and turn out to avoid running into two donkeys that were sleeping in the road. We came down out of the mountains and through an oak forest, and there were white cattle grazing in the forest. Down below there were grassy plains and clear streams, and then we crossed a stream and went through a gloomy little village and started to climb again. We climbed up and up and crossed another high col and turned along it, and the road ran down to the right, and we saw a whole new range of mountains off to the south, all brown and baked-looking and furrowed in strange shapes. After a while we came out of the mountains, and there were trees along both sides of the road, and a stream, and ripe fields of grain, and the road went on, very white, and straight ahead, and then lifted to a little rise. And off on the left was a hill with an old castle, with buildings close around it and a field of grain going right up to the walls and shifting in the wind. I was up in front with the driver and I turned around. Robert Cohn was asleep, but Bill looked and nodded his head. Then we crossed a wide plain, and there was a big river off on the right, shining in the sun from between the line of trees, and away off you could see the plateau of Pamplona rising out of the plain, and the walls of the city, and the great brown cathedral and the broken skyline of the other churches. In back of the plateau were the mountains, and every way you looked there were other mountains, and ahead the road stretched out white across the plain going toward Pamplona. We came into the town on the other side of the plateau, the road slanting up steeply and dustily with shade trees on both sides, and then leveling out through the new part of town they were building up outside the old walls. We passed the bullring, high and white and concrete-looking in the sun, and then came into the big square by a side street and stopped in front of the Hotel Montoya. The driver helped us down with the bags. There was a crowd of kids watching the car, and the square was hot, and the trees were green, and the flags hung on their staffs, and it was good to get out of the sun and under the shade of the arcade that runs all the way around the square. Montoya was glad to see us, and shook hands and gave us good rooms looking out on the square, and then we washed and cleaned up and went downstairs in the dining room for lunch. The driver stayed for lunch, too, and afterward we paid him and he started back to Bayonne. There are two dining rooms in the Montoya. One is upstairs on the second floor and looks out on the square. The other is down one floor below the level of the square and has a door that opens on the back street that the bulls pass along when they run through the streets early in the morning on their way to the ring. It is always cool in the downstairs dining room, and we had a very good lunch. The first meal in Spain was always a shock, with the hors d'oeuvres, an egg course, two meat courses, vegetables, salad, and dessert and fruit. You have to drink plenty of wine to get it all down. Robert Cohn tried to say he did not want any of the second meat course, but we would not interpret for him, and so the waitress brought him something else as a replacement, a plate of cold meats, I think. Cohn had been rather nervous ever since we had met at Bayonne. He did not know whether we knew Brett had been with him at San Sebastian, and it made him rather awkward. "Well," I said, "Brett and Mike ought to get in tonight." "I'm not sure they'll come," Cohn said. "Why not?" Bill said. "Of course they'll come." "They're always late," I said. "I rather think they're not coming," Robert Cohn said. He said it with an air of superior knowledge that irritated both of us. "I'll bet you 50 pesetas they're here tonight," Bill said. He always bets when he is angered, and so he usually bets foolishly. "I'll take it," Cohn said. "Good. You remember it, Jake. 50 pesetas.
"I'll remember it myself," Bill said.
I saw he was angry and wanted to smooth him down. "It's a sure thing they'll come," I said, "but maybe not tonight."
"Want to call it off?" Cohn asked.
"No. Why should I? Make it 100 if you like."
"All right, I'll take that."
"That's enough," I said, "or you'll have to make a book and give me some of it."
"I'm satisfied," Cohn said.
He smiled. "You'll probably win it back at bridge anyway."
"You haven't got it yet," Bill said.
We went out to walk around under the arcade to the Café Iruña for coffee. Cohn said he was going over and get a shave.
"Say," Bill said to me, "have I got any chance on that bet?"
"You've got a rotten chance. They've never been on time anywhere. If their money doesn't come, it's a cinch. They won't get in tonight."
I was sorry as soon as I opened my mouth, but I had to call him.
"He's all right, I guess, but where does he get this inside stuff? Mike and Brett fixed it up with us about coming down here." I saw Cohn coming over across the square. "Here he comes."
"Well, let him not get superior and Jewish."
"The barber shop's closed," Cohn said. "It's not open till 4. We had coffee at the Iruña, sitting in comfortable wicker chairs looking out from the cool of the arcade at the big square. After a while, Bill went to write some letters and Cohn went over to the barber shop. It was still closed, so he decided to go up to the hotel and get a bath, and I sat out in front of the cafe and then went for a walk in the town. It was very hot, but I kept on the shady side of the streets and went through the market and had a good time seeing the town again. I went to the Ayuntamiento and found the old gentleman who subscribes for the bullfight tickets for me every year, and he had gotten the money I sent him from Paris and renewed my subscription, so that was all set. He was the archivist, and all the archives of the town were in his office. That has nothing to do with the story. Anyway, his office had a green baize door and a big wooden door, and when I went out, I left him sitting among the archives that covered all the walls, and I shut both the doors, and as I went out of the building into the street, the porter stopped me to brush off my coat.
"You must have been in a motor car," he said.
The back of the collar and the upper part of the shoulders were gray with dust. "From Bayonne."
Well,
he said. I knew you were in the motor car from the way the dust was. So I gave him 2 copper coins. At the end of the street I saw the cathedral and walked up toward it. The first time I ever saw it, I thought the facade was ugly, but I liked it now. I went inside. It was dim and dark, and the pillars went high up, and there were people praying, and it smelt of incense, and there were some wonderful big windows. I knelt and started to pray, and prayed for everybody I thought of, Brett and Mike and Bill and Robert Cohn and myself, and all the bullfighters, separately for the ones I liked and lumping all the rest. Then I prayed for myself again, and while I was praying for myself, I found I was getting sleepy, so I prayed that the bullfights would be good, and that it would be a fine fiesta, and that we would get some fishing. I wondered if there was anything else I might pray for, and I thought I would like to have some money, so I prayed that I would make a lot of money, and then I started to think how I would make it, and thinking of making money reminded me of the Count, and I started wondering about where he was, and regretting I hadn't seen him since that night in Montmartre, and about something funny Brett told me about him. And as all the time I was kneeling with my forehead on the wood in front of me, and was thinking of myself as praying, I was a little ashamed, and regretted that I was such a rotten Catholic, but realized there was nothing I could do about it, at least for a while, and maybe never, but that anyway it was a grand religion, and I only wished I felt religious, and maybe I would the next time. And then I was out, in the hot sun, on the steps of the cathedral, and the forefingers and the thumb of my right hand were still damp, and I felt them dry in the sun. The sunlight was hot and hard, and I crossed over beside some buildings and walked back along side streets to the hotel. At dinner that night, we found that Robert Cohn had taken a bath, had had a shave and a haircut and a shampoo, and something put on his hair afterward to make it stay down. He was nervous, and I did not try to help him any. The train was due in at 9 o'clock from San Sebastian, and if Brett and Mike were coming, they would be on it. At 9:20, we were not half through dinner. Robert Cohn got up from the table and said he would go to the station. I said I would go with him, just to devil him. Bill said he would be damned if he would leave his dinner. I said we would be right back. We walked to the station. I was enjoying Cohn's nervousness. I hoped Brett would be on the train. At the station, the train was late, and we sat on a baggage truck and waited outside in the dark. I have never seen a man in civil life as nervous as Robert Cohn, nor as eager. I was enjoying it. It was lousy to enjoy it, but I felt lousy. Cohn had a wonderful quality of bringing out the worst in anybody. After a while, we heard the train whistle way off below on the other side of the plateau, and then we saw the headlight coming up the hill. We went inside the station and stood with a crowd of people just back of the gates, and the train came in and stopped, and everybody started coming out through the gates. They were not in the crowd. We waited till everybody had gone through and out of the station and gotten into buses or taken cabs or were walking with their friends or relatives through the dark into the town. I knew they wouldn't come, Robert said. We were going back to the hotel. I thought they might, I said. Bill was eating fruit when we came in and finishing a bottle of wine.
Didn't come, eh?
Nope.
Do you mind if I give you that 100 pesetas in the morning, Cohn? Bill asked. I haven't changed any money here yet.
Oh, forget about it, Robert Cohn said. Let's bet on something else. Can you bet on bullfights?
You could, Bill said, but you don't need to.
It would be like betting on the war, I said.
You don't need any economic interest.
I'm very curious to see them, Robert said.
Montoya came up to our table. He had a telegram in his hand.
"It's for you,"
he handed it to me. It read, "Stopped, Night, San Sebastian." "It's from them," I said. I put it in my pocket. Ordinarily, I should have handed it over. "They've stopped over in San Sebastian," I said. "Send their regards to you." Why I felt that impulse to devil him, I do not know. Of course, I do know. I was blind, unforgivingly jealous of what had happened to him. The fact that I took it as a matter of course did not alter that any. I certainly did hate him. I do not think I ever really hated him until he had that little spell of superiority at lunch, that and when he went through all that barbering, so I put the telegram in my pocket. The telegram came to me anyway. "Well," I said, "we ought to pull out on the noon bus for Burguete. They can follow us if they get in tomorrow night." There were only two trains up from San Sebastian, an early morning train and the one we had just met.
"That sounds like a good idea," Cohn said.
"The sooner we get on the stream, the better."
"It's all one to me when we start," Bill said. "The sooner, the better."
We sat in the Iruña for a while and had coffee and then took a little walk out to the bull ring and across the field and under the trees at the edge of the cliff and looked down at the river in the dark. And I turned in early. Bill and Cohn stayed out in the cafe quite late, I believe, because I was asleep when they came in. In the morning, I bought 3 tickets for the bus to Burguete. It was scheduled to leave at 2 o'clock. There was nothing earlier. I was sitting over at the Iruña, reading the papers, when I saw Robert Cohn coming across the square. He came up to the table and sat down in one of the wicker chairs. "This is a comfortable cafe," he said. "Did you have a good night, Jake?"
"I slept like a log."
"I didn't sleep very well. Bill and I were out late, too."
"Where were you?"
"Here. And after it shut, we went over to that other cafe. The old man there speaks German and English."
"The Cafe Suito?"
"That's it. He seems like a nice old fellow. I think it's a better cafe than this one." "It's not so good in the daytime," I said. "Too hot. By the way, I got the bus tickets." "I'm not going up today. You and Bill go on ahead."
"I've got your ticket."
"Give it to me. I'll get the money back."
"It's 5 pesetas.
Robert Cohn took out a silver 5 peseta piece and gave it to me. "I ought to stay," he said. "You see, I'm afraid there's some sort of misunderstanding."
"Why?" I said. "They may not come here for 3 or 4 days now if they start on parties at San Sebastian."
"That's just it," said Robert. "I'm afraid they expected to meet me at San Sebastian, and that's why they stopped over."
"What makes you think that?"
"Well, I wrote, suggesting it to Brett."
"Why in hell didn't you stay there and meet them then?" I started to say, but I stopped. I thought that the idea would come to him by itself, but I do not believe it ever did.
He was being confidential now, and it was giving him pleasure to be able to talk with the understanding that I knew there was something between him and Brett.
"Well, Bill and I will go up right after lunch," I said.
"I wish I could go. We've been looking forward to this fishing all winter." He was being sentimental about it. "But I ought to stay. I really ought. As soon as they come, I'll bring them right up."
"Let's find Bill."
"I want to go over to the barber shop."
"See you at lunch."
I found Bill up in his room. He was shaving.
"Oh, yes, he told me all about it last night," Bill said. "He's a great little confider. He said he had a date with Brett at San Sebastian."
"The lying bastard."
"Oh, no," said Bill. "Don't get sore. Don't get sore at this stage of the trip.
How did you ever happen to know this fellow, anyway?"
"Don't rub it in." Bill looked around, half-shaved, and then went on talking into the mirror while he lathered his face.
"Didn't you send him with a letter to me in New York last winter? Thank God I'm a traveling man. Haven't you got some more Jewish friends you could bring along?"
He rubbed his chin with his thumb, looked at it, and then started scraping again. "You've got some fine ones yourself."
"Oh, yes, I got some darbs. But not alongside of this Robert Cohn. The funny thing is, he's nice, too. I like him, but he's just so awful."
"He can be damn nice."
"I know it. That's the terrible part."
I laughed.
"Yes, go on and laugh," said Bill. "You weren't out with him last night until 2 o'clock.
"Was he very bad?"
"Awful. What's all this about him and Brett, anyway? Did she ever have anything to do with him?"
He raised his chin up and pulled it from side to side.
"Sure. She went down to San Sebastian with him." "What a damn fool thing to do. Why did she do that?" "She wanted to get out of town, and she can't go anywhere alone. She said she thought it would be good for him." "What bloody fool things people do. Why didn't she go up with some of her own people, or you?"
He slurred that over.
"Or me? Why not me?"
He looked at his face carefully in the glass, put a big dab of lather on each cheekbone.
"It's an honest face. It's a face any woman would be safe with."
"She'd never seen it."
"She should have. All women should see it. It's a face that ought to be thrown on every screen in the country. Every woman ought to be given a copy of this face as she leaves the altar. Mothers should tell their daughters about this face, my son."
He pointed the razor at me.
"Go west with this face and grow up with the country."
He ducked down to the bowl, rinsed his face with cold water, put on some alcohol, and then looked at himself carefully in the glass, pulling down his long upper lip.
"My God," he said, "isn't it an awful face?"
He looked in the glass.
"And as for this Robert Cohn," Bill said, "he makes me sick, and he can go to hell, and I'm damn glad he's staying here so we won't have him fishing with us."
"You're damn right.
We're going trout fishing. We're going trout fishing in the Irati River, and we're going to get tight now at lunch on the wine of the country, and then take a swell bus ride.
Come on. Let's go over to the Aruña and start," I said. Chapter 11. It was baking hot in the square when we came out after lunch with our bags and the rod case to go to Burguete. People were on top of the bus, and others were climbing up a ladder. Bill went up and Robert sat beside Bill to save a place for me, and I went back in the hotel to get a couple of bottles of wine to take with us. When I came out, the bus was crowded. Men and women were sitting on all the baggage and boxes on top, and the women all had their fans going in the sun. It certainly was hot. Robert climbed down, and I fitted into the place he had saved on the one wooden seat that ran across the top. Robert Cohn stood in the shade of the arcade, waiting for us to start. A Basque with a big leather wine bag in his lap lay across the top of the bus in front of our seat, leaning back against our legs. He offered the wineskin to Bill and to me, and when I tipped it up to drink, he imitated the sound of a klaxon motor horn so well and so suddenly that I spilled some of the wine and everybody laughed. He apologized and made me take another drink. He made the klaxon again a little later, and it fooled me the second time. He was very good at it. The Basques liked it. The man next to Bill was talking to him in Spanish, and Bill was not getting it, so he offered the man one of the bottles of wine. The man waved it away. He said it was too hot, and he had drunk too much at lunch. When Bill offered the bottle the second time, he took a long drink, and then the bottle went all over that part of the bus. Everyone took a drink, very politely, and then they made us cork it up and put it away. They all wanted us to drink from their leather wine bottles. They were peasants, going up into the hills. Finally, after a couple more false klaxons, the bus started, and Robert Cohn waved goodbye to us, and all the Basques waved goodbye to